Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paul Hawksby
and Andy Jacobs,
and this is the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show.
Yes, my last rant on Chelsea for a while, hopefully.
Yeah. Who knows who'll be the manager when you return? It could be Jose again, could be Zidane.
It could be JT.
Sorry could have turned it round. Yeah, it could be...
Sorry could have turned it round.
You never know. It might be, you know, you think of all the great managers.
Today, I'm going to go put it in the mixer.
Well, you think...
it's his new tactics.
There's been moments in football history. Sir Alex Ferguson, Howard Kendall, great managers went on to great things, suddenly turned it round. In an instant.
5-0 against Spurs.
Okay. Well, we'll see. But anyway, we had the H&J Book Club, which is a fairly new feature. We brought you last week with Luke Moore from the Football Ramble on the warm-up. And he was back today looking at, as he was then, he wasn't even a knight. He was just plain old Alex Ferguson, CBE. It took us up to the year 2000, managing my life.
Good chat.
Yeah. Looking at his career to that stage, of course. A book written with the late, great Hugh McIlvany.
And I got through a bit more out of it.
Yeah. And he dumped quite a lot of his kind of journalistic equivalent
detritus.
Of aviation fuel. Just got rid of everything he did. Dumped the lot on us. So you'll hear that. And here it all is. Going to kick us off this afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy. Yeah, good afternoon.
Oh,
Andy.
Sorry. Good afternoon, Paul. I beg your pardon. I thought you were going to say something
about
to
off
me.
This game. Well, so anyway, I've been doing that for about 18 years. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
I can count on you not to pick it up.
It's a faint whiff of Ombre Solaire in this studio.
The producer says you haven't given the timeout.
Okay, 7 minutes past one. Yeah. Okay, then you start. Oh, blimey, you've gone already with him. And enough of a pair of you. So
that'd be good. I should take John on holiday with me.
You have just been sellotaping an Adelaide Crows baseball cap to your head. I don't know why. Why have you been doing that?
Well, it's because we're moving offices.
Why the sellotape?
It's not sellotape. I was just sellotaping it to my head. I was just adjusting.
It was the Velcro. Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. Because we're moving offices in about, while I'm away, actually, I won't be here for the first studio shows from the new place, which is a bit upsetting for me.
Zidane's first game.
Great for the listeners, but not for me. Yeah. And, so I thought I'll take anything I need with me. I need to take with me so I can take to the new studio. And when we got taken over by News UK, Ali Ross told me that the big boss doesn't particularly like sport except for Australian rules football.
Oh, okay.
And he loves this one particular team.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, you never know. He might come in and see us.
You're such an arch crawler.
So I got on the website to the. Is it the South Australian? What is it?
It's the Adelaide Crows.
The Adelaide Crows.
I don't even know what team it was. That's not going to win him over, is it?
Of course it isn't. The Adelaide Crows. Yeah. I went on the Adelaide Crows website.
Yeah.
I bought the cap. Because it's got to come from Australia. So that costs as much as the cap. So I bought it. Of course, he's never been in. So I've just had it in the...
So how much did that cost you, you reckon?
About 50 quid.
A 50 quid.
It's quite nice, though. I'll wear it.
Yeah, kind of okay, nice. And there's a picture going to go on the website later on. I'm sure this is eaten in the Chelsea time, but very quickly. You're in a cowboy
quite happy,
hat.
Don't worry.
It's a kind of cowboy hat, isn't it?
I thought it was George Galloway's.
It's lying in the office. No one's really claimed who owns it. It's a kind of. I'll tell you, it might be James Whale. Do you reckon it's James?
Could be. It looks more George Galloway to me. But
okay, well, you put it on. And we'll see what the listeners make of that. But we just maybe someone's going to claim it in the office. No one seems keen at the moment.
Yeah.
So anyway, Chelsea, do you want to fill us in on this before we arrive at the new management idea?
I'm fascinated how after every game that Chelsea don't play well in or lose, which is quite often lately, the pundits will say the other manager, be it Solskjaer or Pep or whoever it is, he's really sussed out how to play against Chelsea. You think, really, it's not that difficult, is it? It's really, really easy to stop Chelsea, as you can see. And for half an hour, it wasn't a bad game, was it?
But no, it was good.
As soon as the goal goes in, Chelsea are like a relegation team. They've got no confidence. So they just collapse. And they know that the manager will do nothing to change it.
Yeah.
So when you're, if you're playing for a manager that's very proactive, if you do go down, you think, well, our manager, he'll put two up front, he'll go to three at the back, he'll do something, he'll go get the ball forward quicker. But this bloke just keeps doing the same thing all the time. It's the Einstein theory of, insanity. It is. Doing the same thing and expecting something different to happen. It's never going to be different. If City score in the first 5 minutes on Sunday, it could be eight. I mean, it could be.
The Zappa Costa substitution felt like a kind of up yours, didn't it? It was like a wind-up.
I've no idea. I don't know what he's doing. I mean, it's quite hard to speak about this fellow on air without swearing or being abusive, because he is absolutely, in my view, hopeless. I was saying to Michael Gray off air that any other manager in the universe, and I'm talking about any level, be it Old Meads, be it Torquay, be it Poch, be it anybody came into Chelsea, the first thing they would do is put Kante back in his proper position. Hmm. The first thing. He must be the only person that can see. I mean, why keep picking Alonso? I mean, Alonso is a decent player. He's a Spanish international. But as all players do, he's struggling. He's having a terrible season, whether he's carrying an injury or he's got some other thing. Who knows with footballers? They're not robots and they get affected.
Yeah.
So you don't pick them. You take them out the firing. They don't keep picking him. And then every game he gives away two goals and they go, oh, yeah, that's right. It's Alonso's fault. Yeah. Why Emerson's done perfectly all right. Why'd you keep picking Alonso? It's just hopeless. Luis, everybody knows in the universe, Luis can't play in a back four. He's no good in a back four. It's not good enough. You've got Christensen there, who's a brilliant defender. But he likes Luis because he can play a 70-yard holiday ball.
Holiday,
I am on
holiday. Blimey,
Hollywood ball.
I said faints.
He's going to pick that. I can predict him. I said he's going to pick that really negative three holding midfield, and that's what he did.
I did think that when I saw the team, he did exactly that.
No Christensen, no Hudson-Odoi, no Loftus-Cheek, no Ampadu, and I mean even Reece James at Wigan would have been useful for Chelsea.
The substitutions by numbers as well. Is that must be driving you mad?
It's pathetic. I mean, you can't work out what the bloke's thinking, really. But.
So we've got a theory. Yeah. Chelsea do have a very, very good manager. Somebody manages people very well, very highly thought of in their midst.
I rate her. Emma Hayes. I would do a job swap. I'd say to Sarri, look, I tell you what, Emma's going to take the team.
That's not fair on the women's team, is it?
Well, I think, they it could be good. They could benefit from Sarri, boy. I had the
but
idea.
He has got a team. If he does move to the women's team at Chelsea, he has a secret weapon, doesn't he?
He has. He's got this woman that he's planning on playing. She's called Georgina.
Georgina, yeah.
She's lovely. Very good player in Italy. Whoever's
sitting in front of the back four at the moment in the women's team has got to get used to being moved further up on the right hand side.
That's about
so Georgina can play in that defensive midfield pivot role. Yeah?
And of course, he's got to find two women that he can actually swap, like Kovacic and Barkley. He'll find two of those and they'll be fine. I think it'll work really well. Would Emma Hayes do a worse job?
No, she wouldn't.
She'd do a better job. I think anybody would do a better job. My son spotted JT, as you all may have done, in the stadium last night. And he texted me and said, I hope he's there to take over as interim manager. We're going, I really hope that's true. So I expected to wake up this morning and hear that had happened.
Did you hear the expletive Sarri ball chant? Did you hear that last night?
I couldn't, actually. I watched the whole game. I couldn't hear it, but I'm not surprised. I mean,
Have the crowd turned, haven't they?
They turned months ago.
Quicker than ever? Would you say on a manager?
I don't think, The thing is, with the last manager, they only turned after a long time. I mean, and he made them turn by his fight with the club. But, you know, look, it all starts. It doesn't just start with Sarri.
What about people like Scolari then, when they turned on Scolari? Was that similar?
Similar, yeah. Similar with AVB. But, you know, they had higher standards in those days. Mm. You know, it all starts without a director of football. You have to have somebody there who knows football, who can do the deals, that, you know, isn't beholden, I'm not saying she is, but isn't beholden to one agent, you know, has a spread of agents and basically, you know, knows football, knows the game. And you know, and builds a team and maybe sell a player to build a player. Like, look at the way Liverpool run that club. I mean, they're making it, it's brilliant what they've done there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely spot on. They've basically shuffled the pack. They've got the players the manager wants, which they should have done with Conte. You know, I mean, buying a goalkeeper for 71 million, I think Kepa's a decent keeper and he could be a keeper for a long time. But he's not. He's young and he's inexperienced and he does have rickets in him, like a lot of them. But he's not 71 million quid. Is he so much better than Neil Etheridge of Cardiff? Really? Yeah. Really, honestly? For 70, I'd have spent 70 million on a left back, like Conte wanted, like Sandro, you know, or a striker. You know, you don't spend 70 million on a goalie when you've got other priorities. You know, they could have gone for a Schmeichel or something like that. There were other keepers they could have tried. You know, that was just mad, absolutely mad. I'm sure in the long term it'll be a decent signing, but when you look at the team's needs now, it wasn't the right thing.
When you get back from your epic trip, will he still be the manager, you think?
No.
You don't think so?
It's happened a lot when I often go away this time of year and I tell you AVB, Scolari.
Yeah. They probably wait till you're away. Anyway, there we are. We can return to that later on. But definitely give the job to Emma Hayes. That's what we're saying. She'll do a better job.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on TalkSport.
Good afternoon, Hawksby and Jacobs. It kicked off last week when we looked at the damned United. And every Tuesday around this time, Luke Moore from the Football Ramble and the warm-up here on TalkSport will join us. And we'll take a look at a football book. Sometimes it'll be a bit of a genre. Sometimes it will be just one particular book. And we'll be looking at new books as well and taking your suggestions and your comments if you've read the book we're discussing. Sir Alex Ferguson, post-career, wrote quite a lot of books. There's Leading, of course, which was the book, it's kind of business book. And there was a follow-up to his autobiography. But back at the end of... just before the noughties, he wrote Managing My Life with the late, great Hugh McIlvany, and we thought it was very timely, really. We should chat about that. Good afternoon, Luke.
Good afternoon to you both. That jazz music's great, isn't it?
It is.
A bit of Oscar Peterson.
Yeah,
love that. Now, it's an incredible story, this, really, because the process they used, it wasn't... I mean, he's known Hugh McIlvany. He's known him for a very long time at this stage. Yeah. And they could have just sat around over a kind of glass of wine and picked over the bones of his career, but it was a bit more forensic than that, wasn't it?
I think it was several glasses of wine in the end.
I think that probably went on.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think the great Hugh McIlvany, as you've mentioned, passed away sadly recently. He worked at national newspapers from 1962 to 2016, Observer, Sunday Times, all that stuff, just in case people weren't fully aware. Mm. And Sir Alex talks about him in very glowing terms, as you'd expect, in the acknowledgements for this book, talks about him as the greatest of the sports writers. And he actually goes above and beyond in terms of how much he lauds him, says he was the only sports writer I would speak to like I'd speak to another manager, because he understood the game that well. Mm. And then they set, Ferguson wanted to write a book about his life so far, and they set about doing that in 1998. And he ended up getting down 250,000 words in his own terms, in quite a sort of unstructured fashion, which he then got his secretary to type up, and
which he would write effectively in longhand, wouldn't he?
He said he'd write it pen and paper, anything he could remember about any game, any team, any player, anything he'd done, and he would just, and McIlvany's job was to be editor, confidant, co-writer, in McIlvany's words, machine gun it into shape, and they ended up with about 180,000 words. And the interesting thing, there's several interesting things about it, but just on this particular subject, they didn't know that Ferguson and the United were going to win the treble in 99, which is when the book ends. They started it in 98, and they had no ending plan for it, and then what happened, and that seemed like a perfect way to bookend it. So that's how it came about, and that's how it ended. I think Ferguson, part of the reason, if we're being completely honest, Ferguson lauds McIlvany is because around 89, 90, when Ferguson was in a lot of trouble at Man United and under a lot of pressure, he opened up to McIlvany and gave him a lot of his time. And McIlvany portrayed him in an entirely fair, balanced way and shed a lot of light on the stuff that Ferguson was doing behind the scenes at United, sort of trying to revamp the youth academy, get rid of the drinking culture, professionalise everything. And this is really a hallmark of everything Ferguson's done throughout his career as a manager. Now, of course, the danger is when we do this type of stuff, talking in the terms of an autobiography, very different to what we did last week with the Damn United by David Peace, because it's essentially we're just talking about a man's career and a man's life here, because that's obviously what an autobiography is. But something that does come across in this book is the things that are really important to Ferguson, his upbringing, his what he would describe as his socialist
politics,
his values for life, if you will, and also just his honesty. And you know, I think with the autobiography of a well-known person, if you're not careful, it can go down that Alan Partridge kind of route. Oh, needless to say, I had the last laugh. A settling of old scores. Now, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that Ferguson doesn't settle a lot of scores. There are a lot of scores to be settled. He does do that in this book, but he does it in quite an honest way. And I think he comes across as someone who's funny, who is honest, who is very aware of his own shortcomings, and he's also very aware of the people he owes his success to. His father, the great Jock Stein, all the great Scottish managers that came along before him. I think he's very aware of his place in that and how much he owes to those people for what he's able to achieve.
Yeah, I often find that it must be the difficult thing. If you're writing someone's autobiography, you've got to kind of capture their voice.
Yes.
And, you know, Hugh McIlvany has got a certain style. I think you could probably read a passage and not know he'd written it and think, oh, that's him. You could probably do that every week in the Sunday Times until very recently. So I think he has. Like, when you read the book, it kind of feels that
it's a blending.
It's a bit, you know, it's not McIlvany interpreting the words. He's tried to capture them. We talked to Tom Watt about this. Tom wrote a book with David Beckham.
Yeah.
And I said, that must have been quite difficult to do. You must have really had to kind of set out to get that voice. Because, you know, if you're reading the book, you're thinking, David Beckham wouldn't use that word. He wouldn't talk like that. I've heard him speak. You have to kind of get that right. It's quite a difficult balance, I'm sure, for anybody who's writing.
Well, I think because they were both Scotsmen of a certain age, I know McIlvany was a touch older, but they came from... Ferguson talks quite a lot in the acknowledgements and in the book itself about the idea that he does include McIlvany in this. Stein, Busby, Shankly, Ferguson, McIlvany. They either come from mining towns in Scotland or shipbuilding towns in Scotland, and they are of the same generation. And if you take, for example, Ferguson was an apprentice toolmaker when he was also a young football player at Queen's Park, I believe.
There's a brilliant picture, isn't it, of him working in there with little kind of glasses on the end of his nose.
In the shipyard, yeah.
It's a fantastic shot of him doing a proper job while he was still a footballer.
So going back to that idea of the style of the writing, Paul, the blending of how McIlvany takes Ferguson's thoughts and his experiences and his opinions and turns them into this beautifully written, quite flowing prose that we associate with him. It does make it a fine piece of work and probably the best, I would say, for me, the definitive sporting autobiography, actually.
Wow, really?
Certainly of that time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I think he's the greatest manager of all time.
I agree with that.
By a long way. This ability to change and adapt, you know, and use a different sort of assistant coach and go with youth at times. And just generally, I mean, of course, like all managers, he made mistakes, he'd admit that. But in general, he was fantastic.
Can you remember when the first one or two of his assistant managers moved on and everyone was saying in the papers it would all be opinion pieces saying, oh, you know, well, it's a real test of Ferguson's mettle now. Mm. And then by the end of it, he'd been through about eight different assistant managers, still had the same success, still won 13 Premier League titles, you know, a cup winner's cup, a couple of Champions Leagues. So clearly he was the common denominator there. But one other thing I like about this, you talk about his ability to adapt, Andy, and his style. I quite like the way it comes across that he professionalises everything. Even Man United. It's easy to think of Man United now, but as you guys know as well as I do, when he came in, there were serious flaws there. There were serious problems with their academy, with the culture at the club, with the lack of success for the size of the club they were. And he applied the same principles at Man United that he applied when he first took a job. I think it was East Stirlingshire in his first management job, 32 years old. He says in the book he was given a £2,000 transfer budget, which he thought wasn't too bad. Then he was told he didn't have a goalkeeper. and he went in there and he professionalised it and he moved on and he moved up and up and up. And of course, that little stint he had in the mid-80s as Scotland manager because of the tragic passing of his mentor, Jock Stein, that obviously stood him in good stead as well, because he took the Man United job a few months after that in 86. So there's a lot to enjoy there. There's no sparing his opinions on certain individuals either, which I think is key for an autobiography. He's very honest in his assessments of people like Gordon Strachan, Eric Cantona, Frank McAvenny, Alan Hansen. There's so much to get involved with. And at this point when he's written it, the fire in his belly is still evident, because he doesn't spare any... He doesn't take any prisoners.
He mellowed, didn't he? Mellowed over the
years. As he got older,
for
sure.
As you would. But I remember going to the Cliff to film some interviews, and he was fearsome. I mean, he was. You were literally... there was an aura about him. There's no question. I mean, it often is with somebody as powerful and famous as that. But there was about him. You were sort of aware of him quite... You know, you wouldn't sort of take any liberties.
Yeah. Do you think, in retrospect, we think of him now as being an elder statesman of the game? We see him up in the crowd at Old Trafford. He's normally got a smile on his face. But then you're absolutely right. He was fierce, wasn't he? And that still comes across in this. It still feels like there's a lot more to be achieved, even though they've just won the treble at the end of this book, you know?
You say he takes no prisoners in what he says about some people. The thing is, at the end of this book, he's talking about players that he's still involved with, still in his team. And he's not altogether particularly happy with them in some cases, and we'll tell you a bit more about that when we come.
Maybe that might be
the signs. The signs were there early on that someone could be out of the club within 2 or 3 years, possibly going to Real Madrid. We're chatting about Alex Ferguson's. Then I think he was just that Alex Ferguson, wasn't he? Hadn't got the night.
That's right. He got CBE first, didn't he? I think. Yeah.
And it is a time capsule, this, because you know, he talks about what they've won so far. Anyway, we'll tell you more. Very, very shortly. It's Hawksby and Jacobs here on Talk Sport.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Luke Moore's with us in the studio. We're looking at, as he was then, just plain old Alex Ferguson. His book, Managing My Life, which took you into the end of the 2000s season.
I like this contribution from the Reverend Phil Richardson.
Yeah.
He says, I used a bit from Sir Alex Ferguson's book in a sermon last week, a bit about how he'd never chastise a player without also giving them some hope. That was a terrible performance for a player of your ability. Yeah. I likened it to how God always encourages us.
Maybe we should bring in a thought for the day.
It's nice. And he's actually even gone and recommended another book to us.
It goes back to that old infamous, brilliant audience with that Billy Connolly did when he talked about thought for the day. And he said, did Jesus play for Tottenham Hotspur, Dad? He said, well, in many ways he did. Maybe the Reverend Phil can bring that to him. We mentioned earlier on the writing was on the wall maybe for some players as this book comes to an end.
Yeah.
And let me just read you this little passage. Manchester United just about to play David O'Leary's youthful and exuberant Leeds team, he says. When a far bigger story came out of it, when David Beckham failed to turn up for our training session on the Friday before the game and also failed to convince me that he had a satisfactory reason for being absent. The explanation that young Brooklyn was unwell. Young Brooklyn, look at him now.
He's still young, Brooklyn.
Yeah. Would normally have made me totally sympathetic. But to cut a long story short, he'd seen Victoria out at a London fashion show and felt that that was unfair on the other teammates. And he says he wouldn't accept he had done anything wrong. And he caused me to lose my temper badly, something I hadn't done for years.
Oh, dear.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Not at all.
But he said that, you know, from time to time, somebody in my job is confronted with a situation which must be handled in a manner that signifies control. Because of all the hype that constantly surrounds David, my decision to leave him in the stands at Elland Road became a bit of a drama. But it was quite straightforward for me. It doesn't matter to me how high a player's profile is. If he's in the wrong, he's disciplined. And David was definitely in the wrong.
But despite the boot in the face and all that, if you ask David Beckham today, how much he respects Sir Alex Ferguson and how intimidated he is by me. I've heard him talk about it. So, you know, it just was one of those things that he's always been a teammate. He was never going to tolerate that kind of individual thing.
No, and I think it's probably vital for someone like Ferguson. And I should say, actually, elsewhere in the book, he does talk about Beckham and his work rate and how hard he is as a trainer. He's absolutely convinced in this book that David Beckham isn't the best striker of the ball in Britain, as he calls him at that time, because of a God-given talent, but because of how hard he worked and how much he was happy to do extra training. So I think there are aspects of Beckham's character he absolutely admired, and I think they are still firm, maybe not firm friends, but they respect each other a great deal now. But I think this is key, and it's something that runs as a thread through the entire book, which is what you guys have alluded to there. No one's going to be bigger than Alex Ferguson at the club, because he's the manager and he's the figurehead and he has to run it and he has to take into account everything that's going on. And I think perhaps maybe he was blindsided a touch by the increase in player power we've seen throughout Ferguson's career. And it's at a ridiculous level now, as I'm sure we all agree. But Beckham was very much in the vanguard of that, wasn't he? And I think it was easy for Ferguson, as he's alluded to in that passage you read, Paul, where he underestimates the reaction to that. He's not convinced that Beckham's excuse was good enough. And I think, I don't know if you mentioned it just there, but he says the key thing is there, he's let his teammates down.
Yeah.
He's let the teammates down. And I can't consider him for selection because of that, because it sets a precedent no matter who he is. Now, of course, we know Beckham in 2003 ended up going to Real Madrid, and that was probably always in the cards, and you wonder whether that would have happened anyway. But it is very much indicative of the way and the style that he manages. And I think that he uses that authority and those principles throughout his career and all the different clubs he's managed, even when he's managing St Mirren, I think it is, and he's also managing a pub at the same time. I imagine a few of the regulars were dealt some of the same treatment. There is a great bit in it, actually. I think it's St Mirren. There's a great bit in it where he goes into training one morning with a black eye because he's had a bit of a bust-up with one of the regulars in the pub. And he says, you get these little photo inlays and little comments. He says, I love running the pub, but it just, you know, it had to go. It wasn't conducive to running a football club at the same time.
He loved his wine, though, and then, of course, you had that thing, that scenario, that he'd invite the other manager in often for a consoling drink.
That's right, generally, exactly.
But and managers like Jose would come and bring very expensive bottles. Do you remember we looked up that time, that Portuguese wine was about $1,000 a bottle?
It was. I mean, if you think this book ends at the point where they just...
And I'd open up the house red and keep
put that one away, keep that for Christmas. They've just won the title. And he says, half a dozen premiership titles in 8 years is quite an achievement, particularly for Ryan Giggs, who has all six medals and is only 26. He says, I use Ryan as a challenge to the others. So it's interesting, isn't it? You think they go on after that to win what? About another seven Premier League titles under him and another Champions League. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? This is only the story so far. So much goes on in his life, doesn't it? I mean, he retires and then he comes back again.
The bit towards the end where he talks about Arsene Wenger, and he says in 98, of course, Arsene won the double, and Ferguson, in his own opinion, and now I don't know if I fully agree with this, but it's Ferguson's opinion that he heartily congratulated Wenger and Arsene on winning the double, and he thought it was a great achievement. Yet when United did something and achieved something, Wenger wasn't quite as forthcoming in his praise. Ooh. Now, of course, exactly. But of course, their relationship's now, it's mellowed now, isn't it? They do quite well. And Ferguson's sort of relationships with other managers is also quite interesting. He's got this real interesting love-hate relationship with Liverpool. We know all about the famous quotes. We haven't got to go into that here. But he talks in quite glowing terms about someone like Graham Souness. you know. But then on another occasion, he'll say, you know what, we were playing against Wales for Scotland in a vital qualifier, and I asked my Scottish players who played for Liverpool, tell me how to get the best out of our team so we can stop Ian Rush. And none of them, apart from Graham Sinise, would tell me, because their loyalty was to Liverpool. And he's very upset about that. And so that's what I mean. It comes back to this whole thing over and over again, this honesty of how he sees every situation. Yeah. He puts it down the page with McIlvenny's help, of course. And what follows is just absolutely riveting. It really is.
There's been books written about him. I mean, Paddy Bartley did Football Bloody Hell, of course, from that famous quote. Yeah. And, you know, that's quite warts and all. It tells some stories. I mean, obviously, you have when you're writing an autobiography, you have control over the narrative.
Yeah.
There's been different things written over the years. There's a lovely story, though, towards the end of the book involving Ruud van Nistelrooy when a press conference was called. He was going to sign for the club.
Yeah.
The club weren't happy with the medical.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, the following day in training with PSV, he does his cruciate, and that's him out for a year. And Sir Alex Ferguson, as Alex Ferguson is then, flies to Eindhoven. He said, I felt so sorry for him on a personal level. I was just gutted from here. The world was at his feet one day. Mm. And it wasn't enough to phone him up. He felt he had to get on a plane, fly there and say, look, you know, let's hope you're going to come back and play at the highest level. I mean, all he knew at that point, it's not like him trying to protect a player. That guy may never have played again.
No, and we haven't mentioned his generosity in writing forward. The number of books we've done on this show over the years, that forward, when we've become a bit of a joke, forward by Sir Alex Ferguson.
It's true. And Ben Thornley was in a little while ago, one of the class 92. Ben was saying he was going to write his forward for his book, but then was taken ill. Yeah. And that's another thing. We keep seeing footage of him in the ground smiling. It's great to see him back at football matches, but someone I know that knows him pretty well, has known him for a long time, said he was quite shocked when he saw him. He seemed very frail. It was a life-threatening thing that he had.
Yeah, and he's 77 years old now.
Yeah, of course.
This year,
and he said he was quite shocked when he'd seen him on the box, but he saw him in the flesh, and he said it's going to take him a while to get back. You know, so I think.
Well, I think what we see with football figures of this size is that, and especially when they're associated with one club, particularly in England's case, I don't want to sort of denigrate what he achieved in Scotland, but in England, he's obviously associated with Man United. When he retires and moves on, we've had a bit of clear blue water now, 5 or 6 years since he's retired. We know what football fans can be like, and they're not as willing to be a bit one-eyed about it now he's retired, and he's seen as a more sort of gentle presence, isn't he? Because he's not immediately threatening to your club. I mean,
More sort of a vuncular than when he was managing. Yeah,
I mean, I support Portsmouth, and I remember us getting on the end of some beatings on Ferguson United. So we all know what it's like.
Yeah.
But now people, I think, view him as a little bit more of an elder statesman type character. He's almost the grandfather of the game in this country now, isn't he? We would probably associate that in the past with Sir Bobby
City
Robson.
Fans probably wouldn't say that, but no. I know.
I'm sure they'll make themselves known. Yeah, I'm sure they'll make themselves known. But just very, very quickly, I wanted to get onto this. Just go back to what you were talking about with Ryan Giggs. Another thing that comes across is how appreciative he is of hard work and work rate and training and how much you have to put in to get to where you are. Now, I've spent time with ex-pros and interviewed them, and they'll talk till the cows come home about how hard work is the most important thing. And I think his career and the careers of a lot of the players who've played under him have been an absolute testament to that. And really, it doesn't get any higher praise than that if you've played under Alex Ferguson at Man United and achieved all those things. And that's typified his life, I think, the way he's thrown himself in all into everything he's achieved. And I think that's one of the things he's really keen to get across in this. And he does do so. And it's a great book. It's a great book.
It's called Managing My Life. Hodder and Stanton, the publishers, is still available in paperback. As we said, we've sadly lost Hugh McIlvenny recently, and he ghosted it for him. It is a fascinating read and a bit of a time capsule because it ends and there was so much more still to come. But it's a cracking read. We do recommend it, and so still available in paperback. Next week, we're going to move on to cycling, which another sport that's had so many fantastic books. We'll look at different sports as we go along. Of course, returning to football along the way. Slaying the Badger is the book about Greg LeMond and Bernardino. It's written by Richard Moore, and he's going to be joining, hopefully.
We'll have to get him on the phone.
I've seen the 30 for 30 documentary. It's a brilliant story.
Amazing story,
So if you read that, you can weigh in next week. If you get a chance to read it before then, we're going to be chatting about it, and we'd love to hear from you. Slaying the Badger by Richard Moore.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Andy, you're off for a couple of weeks and a bit. Yeah. Next time we see each other, we'll be on the eve of Cheltenham.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
So everything must go.
Well, I've got a few things.
No, you have a number of things you want to get rid of.
That's true, but yeah. I don't know if I'll be able to because I've got a few things to talk about. Because I love the story this morning about the affair at the palace between the guy that lights the Queen's fire. I didn't even know that.
It's not metaphorically. You mean literally? That's very impressive at her age.
No, literally.
Okay, the Duke of Edinburgh, obviously. Okay,
It's called. Yeah, he's called the.
Could go to the tower for that. I don't think you can. I don't think they're using the tower for those purposes. To move all those tourists out to put me in there would seem quite extreme.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Why, Dad? Why can't we go and see the crown jewels? Because this bloke from Talksport said something, and
something quite rude.
And he's here.
But his job is it's called the Queen's Fender Smith. Did you ever heard of that job, the Fender Smith? Which one does she play, the Stratocaster or the Telecaster?
Well,
he tunes it up for her. It'd be nice. Like,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah.
You used to do that.
A long time ago. Yeah, I worked for Fender. Yeah.
Bit of a mad story about a woman, a Wolves fan, who'd been banned for hurling a pie at a rival supporter. And claimed it flew out of her mouth when she coughed, and she's trying to get this ban overturned. I don't know. I wasn't
it was
there.
A kind of pre-Heimlich thing, wasn't it? She had to.
Yeah.
But
when she was hauled before the magistrate, sales rep Josephine admitted hurling a pie, but now claims she did so only on the advice of a solicitor who supported Wolves' local rivals Aston Villa.
It's like a murky story.
I can't believe that would be the reason.
But the West Ham fan, was it a West Ham fan it landed on? I think it was.
Yeah,
The fan it landed on was probably under.
It's not ideal, is it?
Well, he thought this was a piece of fresh pie meat, didn't he? Now he realised it had been chewed and was coughed up, makes it even worse. That hits you on the back of your head.
Particularly nice.
That lands in the hood of your parka. That's not much fun, is it? Now, Andy, do you know the old 5-second rule? Food? You drop something on the floor.
You have to pick it up.
As long as it's not into a cow pat, you work on the 5-second rule.
5-second rule. Yeah, we all know that. Yeah.
So, but on the beach in Sidmouth, down in Devon, somebody found a marathon chocolate bar from 1990. So where do you stand?
That's not a 5 seconds.
Where do you stand on the near 30-year rule?
Was it in paper?
A marathon chocolate bar wrapper. Oh, sorry, wrapper, not the actual bar. Would you have? Yeah, you wouldn't have licked the wrapper. Would you?
No.
Thought to date from the 80s was found on Sidmouth. How's this a story? I thought it was the chocolate bar. I've only realised it was the wrapper. Old wrapper found on beach.
Talking of wrappers, I like this. There's a story about Meghan Markle, the Duchess.
Oh, you, Meghan, just first name terms.
She's at a baby shower thing in New York. It says the last do she'll be able to attend before baby Sussex is born. Baby Sussex sounds like a female rapper to me.
I can't call the baby Sussex. That'd be Sussex, wouldn't it? Really, it'd be ridiculous. Fantastic. You're down well with the Sussex fans, obviously.
And I do enjoy the letters of Les Holt, who writes The Sun every day. And,
is he Les Holt? Is he Lay Holt? You think
he could be
is he
French? He could be a French troop.
Yeah, he could be.
But he lives in Manchester. But who knows?
Yeah.
He says, "I'm shocked."
Is he?
Yes, he is. He often is. "I'm shocked elegant Joanna Lumley is a smoker."
Right.
"Where's her intelligence? Cemeteries are overloaded with smokers." I mean, you can't disagree with that. But this bit, "Joanna looks gorgeous, but her breath must smell like an ashtray."
It's not
the thing I think of when I look at Joanna Lumley.
I tend not to.
Well done, Les.
Anthony says, "A fender is also a fancy fire guard." Yeah, we were aware of that, Anthony. That's right.
It was a double thing.
They've been brass things with leather padding on top. You are.
John said he didn't know that.
I'd imagine she has a couple of fireplaces knocking around. I'm sure she does, Anthony, but thank you.
I've just
He's obviously
that.
In that game.
It's a shame to waste this one. I've no idea how old he was, but I'll just do the gag anyway. Yeah. It was a T20 birthday spread from about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Sir Sherard Cowper Coles.
Sir Sherard Cowper Coles?
Yeah. I said, he's got a big family. They're all based in Newcastle. So many Coles.
So many Coles.
Thank you.
Sherard Cowper Coles?
Yeah. That's his name. I don't know. I mean, you know. No idea. But
it does sound a bit like Cheryl Cole, doesn't it? Maybe.
Yes, that's very true, actually. It does.
Cheryl maybe Cowper Coles Vicini.
Yeah, that's a new name.
So what did he do?
I don't know. What was he? I have no idea.
Okay.
I could look it up. But
no, just don't worry, Andy.
Right at the end of the list.
You got the gag out of the way. That's really all it was there for, wasn't it?
Giant. This is on page 3. Giant sea turtle Lulu marked the festive season.
She's not. She's from Scotland. I'm with you.
I don't know if the giant sea turtle, when it opens its mouth, it goes, "Wah!" It probably doesn't.
No.
Lulu marked the festive season with a meal of raw sprouts.
Wow.
What a great story.
This is everything must go, is it? All the dross you haven't got round to during the week.
Yeah. And what about the Welk Man, John? Was that?
Sorry?
There's a good one in there about a Welk Man. I've got to try and find it. Talk amongst yourselves.
Okay, yeah.
Because he looks at my notes every day.
Who does?
Britain's oldest working fisherman is known as the Welkman of Whitstable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing else other than that. I mean, I don't even know why I wrote it down, actually. So long ago.
Wow.
Yes.
We are really, the dregs are being scraped
where
now.
Where are we like this one? I found another, because I often don't do these birthday spreads. T20 birthday spread.
Do you want me to guess the age or you just want to do the gag? Just do the gag. Just do the gag.
Fergus Cochrane Diet. I lost 10 pounds on that one.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
How are you spelling diet?
D-Y-E-T.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's good.
You see the story today. Iranian football fans are hoping to settle down to watch the Bundesliga match between Bayern Munich and Augsburg, as they often do of a weekend, because Premier League football and European football is very popular in Iran. Unfortunately, the referee...
Yes. What a story.
...was Bibiana Steinhaus, Germany's top referees. And, of course, strict rules in the Islamic Republic doesn't allow a display of large amounts of female flesh. And it was felt that Bibiana's shorts would show off a bit too much flesh. So they decided not to show the game.
What about if they got a big one, like, say, Manchester United, Liverpool and something, and Sean Massey is the lineswoman, the assistant?
Well, I think it's bigger than that, than the match, isn't it, really? I think they wouldn't show that either, but that's right. I mean, so
it was the Laureus Sports Awards. They've come and gone again with no notice whatsoever.
Yeah.
And as Roger Moore once called it, the Lifetime Achievement Award went to Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, well, why not? Yeah, of course.
Honestly, it's such a strange thing, the Laureus Sports Awards. Mm. It's a really massive, overblown thing that never gets that much publicity for some reason.
No, that's very true. I think believe it.
That'll do, says
John.
That'll do.
Andy, you can burn those notes there in a skip as you leave and then produce fresh ones for Cheltenham.
Well, I will.
We're going to bring you the... As always, the 4 days of Cheltenham will be there.
I could leave these with Luke. He could just introduce them at a random stage.
He'll never. It's the workings of a madman. Don't put those notes in the hands of anybody else, because honestly, you'll be locked up.
Probably.
So, yeah, we're full 4 days of Cheltenham right here on tour. Big Alan, of course, will be coming in the mornings live from Cheltenham. We'll pick up at 1 o'clock. And
we'll have Ruby every day, I hope.
Yeah, live racing, of course, from Rupert Bell Corner. I'm all the big races and all the colour from the festivals.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. Have a fantastic break.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you just on the eve of Cheltenham. But Luke Moore's going to be with me at different points. We'll have Sam Delaney here and comedian and talking fan Charlie Baker. So a bit of a mixed bag in Andy's absence. But we'll keep bringing you the H&J Daily. And thanks for downloading us.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.